Mr. Ellis, reel six.
While we were in this bungalow on Pancor Island, about the second day there, we suddenly found an old Chinese lady come up to us in her black peasant dress and hat, and in perfect English asked us if we wanted a nana. So we said, well, what can you do? She says, well, she said, I can chase your cook, I can do the washing and cleaning and buy the whatever things you want, etc., etc. So we said, all right, how much do you want? So she said, well, whatever you can give me. So we said, all right, and agreed to her coming. And we found out that she was the wife of a fisherman along the beach, and lived in a little bamboo shanty off of that. And we couldn't correlate her perfect English with this. And it turned out that she had been to Cambridge and got a university degree. She not only spoke English perfectly, she could speak about 5 other languages. So we said, well, what on earth are you doing here, married a fisherman? She said, surviving. Her father was a very wealthy Chinese businessman, and he died suddenly, and she was cast out. And at that time, a Chinese woman was worth nothing. She'd like to go in a brothel or live on the streets, but she couldn't earn a living any other way. And when this fisherman offered to marry her, she did it to survive, and that's how she'd been. And while we were there, we had a Major General Woods come visiting us, because he had a crush on the Gurkhas, and he'd heard this Gurkha group were there. Our mode of transport was a landing craft which was on loan to us with a Marine sergeant in charge of it, and he brought Major Wood and his entourage round. Actually, it was only his aide-de-camp that came with him and there. And this Captain Guy, I don't know his surname now, quite a young man, and a bit overawed by the occasion, he said, I've got to entertain the Major, so you won't be able to eat with us. You'll have to eat up in your room, you sergeant, you see. All right, guy. But he didn't drink either, you see. And he would want us to leave our drinks down there so as he could entertain this Major General. But he didn't ask us nicely. He'd always say, you will, you know. And we just turned around and said, you can get stuff kind of thing. You've got your beer, you'll have to make it do with that. So, of course, he got all knocked about that, but we took no notice. We went up to our room, and later on the Marine Sergeant came up to join us, and he brought some rum off of the boat with him as well. And there we are, too. And the Major General Woods came and his aide, and maybe there was another officer with him or something. Hey, it's a good day to you, Sergeant. No. Right, we'll go in and dine. We went up, and our food was a bit slow in coming because this nana was serving them first, obviously, downstairs. But then she was coming in with huge heap plates of things, you know, to put on the table for us to eat, etc. Giggle, 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 you know. What's the matter with you? And all she'd go out there, you see. And there we were with a tremendous meal. We thought, God, she really has put the stops out, you know. Guy must have guests to entertain more often. Suddenly there was bang, bang on the door, you see. And a voice, can I come in? And we realised it was this Brigadier General, so we got up and said, yes, come in, sir. I bloody thought so, he says. Got another chair? So, said, yeah, we've got another chair, you see, and sat him down, and the nana came out. He's You can giggle all you want. He says, I'm one of them now. Got me? Yes, yes. And down he sat, and he said, well, I'm not going to be offered a drink. You know, so, of course, there was all the drinks on the table, and we poured him that, and he had his nice big meal with us. And after about half an hour, there was a sudden timid tapping on the door, you see. This was his aide, and this Catlin guy came in. Ah, there the pair of you are. And he said, there's nothing left to eat, he said, so you didn't come looking like that. He said, I don't know if the lads can be persuaded to give you a drink. That was to his aid, you know. So he said, yeah, I can drink. Thank you. And he turned around to him, Guy, he said, let this beer listen to you, young guy. He says, never fall out with your senior NCOs. And there he was out swooning the nude with us in the afternoon, big pot-bellied old so-so. Then we all had tea together after, and it was quite a good fad.
You said how after you'd finished in France you had that briefing. Did you have any such briefing after the Malayan thing?
No, none at all. None at all.
Why should there have been a difference?
I don't think anybody was interested. They were only interested in most likely what the officers said, anyway. His lot was supposed to be going to Kuala Lumpur for a court of inquiry because of his conduct in the field with a Major General Tremlett. Unfortunately, Major General Tremlett got killed in an Oster crash coming up from Singapore. And everything got swept under the map. I mean, SOE were very good at sweeping things under the map, as far as I could see.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, if there was anything against you or anything, I mean, my misdemeanors, for example, they would...
In Algiers?
Yes, they would just sweep those away, whereas if you were in a full army unit, I mean, I'd still be in the glasshouse, I expect. The only thing I heard afterwards, and I'm sure Blondie was wrong there, but never mind, was that Blondie got sent down to Kuala Lumpur while I got sent to the Gurkhas, and they promptly pushed him down to Jakarta, get him out of the way, because they said Hedlock wanted to court-martial him for things in the field. And as I always said to Blondie, I said, don't be daft. I said, you always is a green-eyed boy, you know, especially after we had a message in from Louis Mountbatten congratulating him on receiving his MM, you see, which he was told while we were in there, for exploits in France. I said, no, you got it mixed up. I said, if he was going to have anybody court-martialed, it was me. Because we came as near, you know, shoot out one another as not. So there we are. But I don't know if you saw it in the Telegraph or not, obituary.
But the obituary of Lieutenant Colonel James Hislop.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Holden must have shown me this last year.
Because I sent him a copy of it, and he just couldn't believe it was the same man. And he wanted to really go to town about it. But I said, once the man is dead, you can't do anything about it.
Can we say something about the period I think you spent in India immediately after the war, between going from Malaya back to the UK?
Yes. We were all stationed in a cantonment at Meerut, near New Delhi, where we were unwinding. And our particular cantonment was probably about a mile and a half outside the main area of Meerut. But because we had our accrued pay, we had all the carriages and horse-drawn carriages and that around. And then towards the centre of the town was also a little encampment where our Fanny personnel were stationed, such as those survived were. And they had a barbed wire surround and a dozen Indian guards to look after them. And then one night we had a call out by the CO, out, arms and ammunition, the wogs were after our girls. And so we all piled out, got our weapons and got into the garages and tore up the avenue about a mile and a half. And we could see in the distance this mob with their blazing torches and what have you, who were all trying to get at the white girls in the compound. The 12 Indians had long disappeared.
These were the Indian Army Guards?
Indian Army Guards, yes. As we got near, we just started to fire into the mob, regardless. And before you could say anything, they just disappeared like a puff of smoke, leaving the bodies behind them of those that we had hit.
You said the Fannies had rung you up?
Yes. The Fannies, when they found this mob coming forward, when suddenly their guards had disappeared, had phoned up the CO and asked for help as they were being attacked.
Were any of the women harmed?
No, nobody got into the compound. Fortunately, the barbed wire entanglements around were very stiff and kept them at bay long enough until we got there, which wouldn't have been many minutes after they'd phoned us anyway.
Were they trying to drag the barbed wire away?
There was, we don't know how they didn't get in, actually, because there were quite big holes in places around it.
Did the Fannies seem grateful?
Oh, yes. As I think I've said before, the Fannies regarded us as their brothers. We were all family, not as different units. And, thank God, you know, you're here kind of thing. There were more liaisons, possibly, between the Fanny and some of our bods then, but I don't know anybody who married anybody on that.
I think you had further experiences in Pune afterwards.
Well, because of this riot up in Merritt, we were all dispersed to the four winds out of the way. I was one of the last to go because I was waiting for a repat, and Blondie Holden was in hospital having his cartilage in his knee looked at, and when he came, both of us had to go down to Pune then and join the regiment, which was the Armoured Corps base in India. And when we got there, we found that all the previous NCOs and officers were in quarantine with smallpox. And although there were some troops there, there was only the CO, who apparently had been away at the time, and therefore was not in quarantine, an officer who joined with us, and the two of us to run the entire regimental depot. And this was only a few weeks before the Navy mutiny in Bombay, and feelings were getting very hot around the collar. And we were then instructed by the CO, nobody else to do it, on riot control. And this meant taking an armoured car and six troops down to a riot spot to control it. Now, the armoured car would have its Beza machine gun, 50 rounds of ammunition, but no belt. Each round would have to be individually loaded. We would given 12 rounds of ammunition for each of the rifles of the troops and 6 rounds of ammunition for the revolver carried by the NCO or officer. We also had a native magistrate with us. The thing was, we were to go down, confront the rioters, read the riot act, and tell them to go home. If they disobeyed this, and the riot got worse, we were to fire a round over their heads. For this, we had to get written permission from the magistrate, the NCO officer to hand out 1 round for each of the men, for them to load up, give the order to fire, then collect the empty cartridge cases and give them back to the magistrate to count that just the 12 had been fired, and continue from there. Under no circumstances were we to fire into the mob. Fortunately for myself, my compassionate repat came within a couple of days. Fortunately, it was the day that the other officers and NCOs were allowed out of quarantine, because the night before, Blondie had put the other officer into hospital. He'd been guard commander in our compound, and the silly fool tried to jump the fence to test the guard. And the guard had called out, "Halt, who goes there?" twice, and nothing happened. And Blondie just snatched his bayoneted rifle from him and lunged and caught him in the groin. So that taught him. And anyway, the following day we were all in a classroom getting to know one another again, when Blondie, who was being made acting orderly sergeant, came barging in. "Oh, let's get your gear, you're off." And without any protest from the officer in charge, just took me away and got me going to fly back to England.
So you never actually went on the riot control duty? No. In...
No, I was very glad to miss it.
What dates do you think that you left Pune about? Because I think the Royal Indian Naval mutiny was in 46.
That's right, it was in 46. Beginning of February, I would suggest.
And
46.
When would the riots in Meerut have occurred?
That would have been early January. Mid-January.
What do you think the motivation was for attacking the Fanny's compound in Meerut? Was it purely sexual, or were there any other reasons?
No idea. I never did find out why that particular riot took place at all. I can only think that it could only have been sexual, because there was, you know, there were no other troops hardly in the place. There was no provocation for people to riot over conditions or getting rid of the British Raj or anything. I would say that they'd just been stirred up, that there were infidel women in the cantonment at this time they were got rid of.
Do you think the mob were Muslims or Hindus or both?
That again I couldn't say.
You were telling me earlier off the record about a problem you ran into in Ceylon about this time with the attitude of a certain officer towards not wanting social mixing with other ranks.
Yes, well, I used to like to take lady friends down to the Grand Oriental Hotel, which was the only one that was in bounds for other ranks, on the weekend, enjoy dinner and dancing, etc. Unfortunately, this officer didn't like the look of another rank being in the hotel that he was frequenting, so he tried to stop me going there. And amongst one of the things he did was to put a general order out that collars and ties will be worn at the hotel. And this was before other ranks were allowed to wear them. So I put a collar and tie on the following week and went in and promptly had the red caps up with a major saying that I was under arrest because I was improperly dressed. And I said, well, general order says that I must wear a collar and tie here. He said, oh yes, but other ranks not allowed to wear it. So I said, well, perhaps you'd better look at this, sir, and handed him a permit that I had in my pocket. And it said that I was permitted to wear any uniform, part of uniform, or mixture of uniform that I thought necessary. And then he looked at the signature, and it was Winston Churchill. So I was allowed to continue there for the time being. He then tried another week to take it out on a young lady friend that I was with. Out to East, we weren't allowed to wear any insignias of regiment or brigade. She was in civvies with a handbag, and on her handbag was the Special Forces wings. She was going to be put under arrest for showing a insignia. And I told the major, don't be so silly, that didn't apply out Far East. It was, to my certain knowledge, from Special Forces in England, and was a memento. There was no such force out East to wear them. Fortunately, just then, a naval commander came over, and he said, Rear Admiral so-and-so sends his compliments. He said, you seem to be having problems. He wondered whether it would help out if you were to come and join him over his table. The young lady's commanding officer was with the Rear Admiral over there, and so the pair of us just took our drinks up and went over. I never had any more trouble than GOH after that.
So this was chit you referred to. It was a chit signed by Churchill to say that SOE other ranks could wear any combination of uniform they deemed necessary.
Yep. In fact, it wasn't just for other ranks. It was every one of us had one of these chits because being...
When you say any one of us, any SOE person?
Any SOE person. Because... having the Americans, the French, and the English together, it came about, first of all, when we were all issued with American jump boots, which we all wore with British uniform, which, of course, was completely non-standard. So we had to have a pass to cover us, and this is what we got.
So it really just applied to the JEB routines?
Yeah. Yeah, presumably so, yes, it would do.